Hello, and welcome to 15 Minute History. This season, we'll teach you about important people and the lessons their lives teach us. If this is your first time here, then thanks for joining. Stay connected with us at our website at 15minutehistorypodcast.org, where you can find transcripts and older episodes. Now, let's start the show.
The man whose whole life is spent in performing a few simple operations, of which the effects are perhaps always the same, or very nearly the same, has no occasion to exercise his understanding or to exercise his invention in finding out expedients for removing difficulties which never occur. He naturally loses, therefore, the habit of such exertion and generally becomes as stupid and ignorant as it is possible for a human creature to become. Adam Smith, An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations.
In lieu of a story from history this week, I want to give you some context for today's episode. This season, we've been covering individuals who have had a direct effect on history, in a positive or negative way. Adam Smith is one of those. He is called the father of modern economics and the creator of capitalism. Rather than walk you through a summary of his life, I instead want to treat you to three of his most popular ideas, the influences that helped him form them, and provide possible context for each. I will attempt in vain to summarize the possible influences that form the three major concepts which exist in his later and final work, The Wealth of Nations, namely the appropriation of self-interest, the division of labor, and the invisible hand, thereby showing the linear deduction of each and how that logic reflects in Adam Smith's moral philosophy. With the presentation of these three ideas, it is my hope that you, our audience, will make your own deductions regarding what kind of man he was and whether his effect on history was a positive one. Influences. Adam Smith was a student and teacher during the era of Enlightenment, which lasted from 1685 to 1815. Born and coming of age in the middle of the period, he had many influences during his academic career. His adherence to natural law, the belief that humans possess intrinsic values ascribed by nature rather than by society or governments, was as much part of his economic philosophy as his moral ideology. He illustrates his views in two of his most famous works. In The Theory of Moral Sentiments, he postulates on his moral position. In The Wealth of Nations, he espouses on economic systems as a result of his previously stated moral conviction. These works have been contested among contemporary historians since their publication, the main objection being that the views expressed in both contradict one another. Charles M. Clark states that, quote, "We see no discrepancy between the Adam Smith in The Theory of Moral Sentiments and the Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations," end quote. On the other hand, Edward W. Cooker states that, quote, "The economic man of The Wealth of Nations is constrained by the prudent man in The Theory of Moral Sentiments," end quote. And Emma Rothschild's statement in writing about the invisible hand, quote, "But the subjects of are blind and cannot see the hand by which they are led," end quote. While this later reference is an example of a type of man portrayed in both of Smith's major works, there are other examples arguing both sides into how Smith depicted himself as a very different man with different ideas. Some historians have stated that the differences exhibited in both works are, in fact, not differences at all, and that there is an inherent congruity between the two works which gives the reader insight into Adam Smith's views of man, morals, and economics. Self-interest. Adam Smith defines self-interest as the motivation behind our desires. Quote, "It is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own self-interest. We address ourselves not to their humanity, but to their self-love, and never talk to them of our own necessities, but of their advantages," end quote. It is impossible to investigate the influence of self-interest on the Wealth of Nations without first learning of its origins in the Theory of Moral Sentiments. In the Theory of Moral Sentiments, Smith constructs a closed system where sympathy and an impartial spectator act as surrogates for an individual's social conscience. This system of thought seemed to have originated from many different sources. Early in his life, during his education in Glasgow, Smith studied under the renowned teacher and philosopher Francis Hutcheson, who was one of the leaders of the Scottish Enlightenment. Hutchinson promoted the theory of moral sense, which he believed to be, quote, implanted by God to be an innate sense of pleasure for objects that are not necessarily to our advantage, and for nobler pleasures like caring for others or appreciation of harmony, end quote. This perception of the inner self gives reference when interpreting the actions of individuals within a society. While the influence of his teacher is obvious within the theory of the impartial spectator, Smith's theoretical dichotomy came when he perceived self-interest as an ethically positive driving force. David Hume, another leader in the Scottish Enlightenment, promoted the ideals of empiricism, which sees moral thought as the, quote, expression of sentiments that evolve as a result of experience, that all concepts are about or applicable to things that can be experienced, or that all rationally accepted beliefs or propositions are justified or knowable only through experience, end quote. As Smith's close friend, it is easy to decipher the influence of this teacher within the realm of self-interest. The drive to emulate that which is respected or admired within one's sphere of existence is paramount to the experiences perceived within that sphere. Another way to say it is that we are influenced by our surroundings, and the concept of self-interest does not exist in a silo. We are, naturally, part of societal systems and standards. Those standards are the result of innate moral convictions that are communicated through sympathy, love, charity, and sacrifice. Other influences, namely Lockean natural law, are also reflective within Smith's philosophical reasoning, as they are important principles taught during his time at Glasgow. With these influences, Adam Smith connected the idea of self-interest with that of sympathy. He knew that societies consisted of family, friends, and acquaintances, and as a result of experiences within all three and more, our innate self-interests will be closely aligned with the happiness of those that we care about, and our pursuit of what we desire will include such considerations as we seek to better our own condition. Quote, "The purpose of self-interest is not only to drive the larger economic engine of society. It also ensures that individuals direct their moral energy in a way that is consistent with their limited abilities and knowledge," end quote. We see the latter part of this statement illustrated in his belief in the division of labor. The division of labor. Smith defines division of labor as, quote, "the greatest improvement in the productive powers of labor, and the greater part of skill, dexterity, and judgment with which it is anywhere directed or applied," end quote. This means that labor specialization not only contributes to the quality of the work, but inherently adds to the quantity. Theories in division of labor, similar to those of self-interest, did not originate with Adam Smith. Plato's Republic defines this theory as economically significant. In addition, countless medieval records describe this division as contributory to the community as a whole. Thomas Aquinas stated that, quote, "one man is not able to do all things which are needed within a society, and accordingly, different people work at different tasks," end quote. Among these possible literary influences, there are societal impacts which cause Smith to give literal application. Mercantilism, which could be described as the exact opposite of Smithian economics, was one such influence. The system of mercantilism defined a nation's supply of capital, coupled with a positive balance of trade, was the determinant of a nation's economic welfare. To put it simply, it is the system in which the country attempts to gain wealth through trade, exporting more than it imports while increasing in gold and other metals. This influence was prevalent throughout the 18th century and was considered the modal means of economic interpretation before the Wealth of Nations. Another view to which Smith was exposed was that of the French physiocrats and their founder, François Quesnay. It stated a belief in private property, minimal government, and bureaucratic non-interference. It was one of their predecessors, Vincent de Gournay, who created the term laissez-faire. Obviously, Smith did not agree with the mercantilists, nor did he completely agree with the physiocrats, who determined that agriculture and farming were the center of economic productivity and had continuing disagreements about whether labor was productive or unproductive. Agree or not, these two influences, coupled with his already determined theories of self-interest, allowed for his own interpretation of the importance of the division of labor, where the individual is productive within his or her specialization. No one can be everything at once. Specialization is the key to pursuing excellence and mastery, allowing all members within a society to exercise their talents in the way they see fit. In production, this looks like the breaking down and separation of the working process into a number of tasks that go into creating a whole product. In business, it can be specialized teams and departments responsible for daily operations, marketing, and finance. Conversely, too much specialization can lead to the mundane tasks cited in the quote at the beginning of the podcast, where the drive of the individual is lost within the needs of the industry. However, when the division of labor is combined with the concept of self-interest, there exists a check and balance, governed by desire, which may push the individual into a new specialization. Smith summarized this idea with the concept of the invisible hand. The invisible hand. The notion of the invisible hand has become synonymous with Smithian economics. Stated simply, it means that, quote, the result of everyone pursuing his own self-interests will be the maximization of interests within a society, end quote. The possible influences for this theory can be assumed. The phrase is first used in Smith's History of Astronomy, where the reference is made sardonically in relation to the polytheistic societies who ascribe natural events such as storms to fairy tale beings. The second use was recorded in the Theory of Moral Sentiments, where unconcerned rich farmers advanced the interests of society through the exploitation of their peasant workers. This passage was influenced by Bernard Mandeville in his Fable of Bees, where it is argued that personal vices such as greed, avarice, and envy were public virtues in that they led people to economic activity. The third and final reference appears in The Wealth of Nations, where the individual worker progresses the interests of society by pursuing his or her own. Possible influences on this theory can be found in the literature of the time. From Macbeth to Ovid, where the hero is stabbed in the back, quote, twisted and piled his invisible hand, causing a wound within a wound, end quote. Speculation has been raised about Smith's real definition regarding the invisible hand, saying that all references to it were done sardonically or sarcastically. Most of these interpretations are done through the lens of contemporary history, where some modern historians look through the eyes of current circumstances in order to surmise the intentions of historical figures. Throughout his writings, it seems like the notion of the invisible hand evolved from its sardonic uses to the more useful analogy, which describes the modal movement of goods and services provided by those acting within the realm of their own self-interest as a result of personal sympathy within the division of labor. It is not my purpose to argue either point, but to provide a viable argument for both. Outcome. The influences of Adam Smith on these three themes created a line of thought which transcends the economic principles and gravitates toward a moral outcome. According to Smith, self-interest is more likely to lead people to help others rather than hurt them. It leads the butcher and the baker to feed others, not turn them away hungry. This basic principle lends itself to the importance of the division of labor, in which the specialized individual is capable of feeding multitudes quality food because he or she specializes in that specific area. The invisible hand, as defined by The Wealth of Nations, is said to automatically move in accordance with these principles, moving the society of specialized individuals towards a more productive and thereby happier end. These three moral themes are only pieces of the grand picture Adam Smith presented in both The Theory of Moral Sentiments and The Wealth of Nations. The influences of Adam Smith provided him with the tools needed to construct both the moral philosophies and the economic principles which are still in use today. Thank you for joining us on 15 Minute History. Please send us your questions on Facebook or at 15minutehistory@gmail.com and then leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. You can also help us make this podcast even better by going to our website and clicking the donation button. Thank you, and see you all next week.